From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the Egypt Code with Robert Bavall. Looking forward to that discussion with Robert. Well, now scientists have discovered that going veggie could be bad for your brain, with those on a meat-free diet 6 times more likely to suffer brain shrinkage. The vegetarians are most likely to be deficient because the best source of the vitamin, they say, the important vitamins are meat, particularly liver, milk and fish. Vitamin B12, a deficiency, they say, can cause anemia and inflammation of the nervous system. Yeast extracts are one of the few vegetarian foods which apparently provides good levels of the vitamin. The link was discovered by Oxford University scientists who used memory tests, physical checks, and brain scans to examine 107 people between the ages of 61 and 87. When the volunteers were retested 5 years later, the medics found that those with the lowest levels of vitamin B12 were also the most likely to have brain shrinkage. It confirms earlier research showing a link between brain atrophy and low levels of B12. Well, a stunning makeover of Wall Street's landscape sent stocks plummeting, with the Dow Jones Industrials losing 500 points in their worst slide since the 9/11 attacks. Investors recoiled after a shakeup of the financial industry that took out now two storied names, Lehman Brothers Holdings and Merrill Lynch, the bull. The pullback, which erased about $700 billion in shareholder wealth, occurred across much of the globe as investors absorbed Lehman's bankruptcy filing and what was essentially a forced sale of Merrill Lynch to Bank America for $50 billion in stock. In a moment, Catherine Austin Fitz joins us to shed some light on this debacle. The Internal Revenue Service is trying to collect billions of dollars in late taxes from nearly 500,000 federal employees. Documents show that the federal employees and retirees did not pay more than $3.5 billion in taxes owed last year. The Department of Defense has notified Congress of a potential sale to Israel of 1,000 smart bombs capable of penetrating underground bunkers, which would be likely used in the event of a military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. The notification to Congress was made over the weekend by the Defense Security Cooperation Agency. Now, that's a branch of the Pentagon responsible for evaluating foreign military sales. Congress now has 30 days to object to the deal or not. The deal is valued at $77 million. The principal contractor here would be Boeing's Integrated Defense Systems. Accusations that a soccer player was using witchcraft during a match in eastern Congo sparked a riot that killed 13 people. Most of the victims were between the ages of 11 and 16. They were suffocated as panicked crowds ran for the exits during the mayhem. A gang of Satan worshippers killed and ate four Russian teenagers in a sickening ritual. This was in Russia. The Satanists stabbed each of their victims a terrifying 666 times before dismembering their bodies and cooking them on a bonfire. In Los Angeles, federal rail investigators said they would go to court to get an engineer's cell phone records to determine if he was text messaging when his commuter train slammed head-on into a freight locomotive, killing 25 people. The investigation into Friday's fatal Metrolink crash was also focusing on whether signal lights worked properly and were synchronized with a control center where a dispatcher was warned of a problem, apparently only after the collision had occurred. The investigators will subpoena the cell phone records of engineer Robert Sanchez after two teenage train buffs who were his friends said they received a text message from him a minute before the crash. Hurricane Ike will be entered into the record books for the severe damage it inflicted in and around Galveston, Texas. The cost of Ike's rampage along the Gulf Coast could reach $22 billion, which would make it the third costliest hurricane on record, behind Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and Hurricane Andrew in 1992. The storm's enormous size, nearly as large as the state of Texas, spread its destruction from eastern Louisiana to Texas. In Orange, Texas, Hurricane Katrina chased bluesman Clarence Gatemouth Brown from his adopted home in New Orleans to his hometown in Orange, Texas, near the Texas Gulf Coast, where he died in exile. Now another hurricane has disturbed his rest. The 1982 Grammy Award-winning Caskets was one of dozens that popped up from the ground when the Gulf and rainwaters from the Hurricane Ike flooded Hollywood Cemetery there. People must accept death at the hour chosen by God, according to Pope Benedict XVI, as he told ailing pilgrims in an anti-euthanasia message at Lourdes, the shrine that draws the desperate, sick, and dying. Now, while several European countries permit euthanasia, the Vatican vehemently maintains that life must continue to its natural end. The Pope said in his homily that the ill should pray to find the grace to accept without fear or bitterness to leave this world at the hour chosen by God. Richard Wright, a founding member of the rock group Pink Floyd, has died. He's 65 years old. Pink Floyd's spokesperson, Doug Wright, not related to the artist, said Wright died after a battle with cancer at his home in Britain. Wright met Pink Floyd members Roger Waters and Nick Mason in college and joined their early band, Sigma Six. Along with the late Syd Barrett, the four formed Pink Floyd in 1965. A 33-year-old woman posed as her 15-year-old daughter to enroll at school because she wanted to be a cheerleader. Wendy Brown of Green Bay, Wisconsin, has now been charged with identity theft after she used her daughter's ID to become a student at the school. She attended cheerleading practices and a party at the cheerleading coach's house. She was given a cheerleader locker, paid for her uniform with a check that later bounced. Our feature story at coasttocoastam.com. You will see the possible first photos of a planet around its star-like sun. It is 8 times the mass of Jupiter. It lies far away from its star, about 330 times the Earth-Sun distance. But for all planet strangeness, its star is quite like our own sun. It's a great story that you'll find up there at coasttocoastam.com. Almost 50% of Americans, according to recent polls, and millions of people elsewhere in the world, believe that UFOs are real. For many, it is a deeply held belief. And you know on this show, we take the subject of UFOs quite seriously. Tuesday on ABC's Primetime, a new look at UFOs with their show, UFOs Seen as Believing with David Muir. He's the anchor of World News Saturday and co-anchor of Primetime. I had a chance to talk with David today about the upcoming show and the fact that many in the UFO community weren't too happy about the UFO Seen as Believing show with the late Peter Jennings from 3 years ago. David, you're a pretty hard newsman. How do you feel about doing a primetime show, UFOs Seen as Believing, on ABC?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm sure Peter Jennings was asked the same question about 4 years ago. You're aware that he did the Seeing is Believing program when ABC News first examined this, and they decided to re-examine it because there was such an enormous amount of interest the first go-round. And I think that ABC was simply waiting for even more evidence out there, a reason for us to update the program. And it was basically handed to us this summer when we learned of NASA's discovery of water on Mars, which was, you know, an unprecedented discovery and such incredible excitement within NASA about what they found. And also over the last year, as you know, the Stephenville, Texas story captured, you know, national headlines, a number of people all saying they saw the same thing, which goes along with so many of the sightings Peter first looked at several years back.
You know, many in the UFO community, David, feel as if that first documentary on UFOs was not fair, was a little too heavy-handed against those who believe in this phenomenon. What was your take on that?
You know, I think you'll see that we revisit some of those stories. And I think what Peter and the producers were trying to do that first go-around, and will certainly try to do again on Tuesday night's program, is to provide some balance. I think I understand where people are coming from when you hear some of these psychologists or other experts try to explain away some of these stories or eyewitness accounts. And I think we have to put a little bit of that in there to create some sort of balance. But I think if you look at it on the whole and you see, you know, the dozens of stories we dive into and tell and share in front of a national audience, that I think just the fact that we take it seriously enough to put a national news program on the air in prime time, it's not a tongue-in-cheek, take a look at these stories and what do you think. It's really kind of a thorough look, a 90-minute look at some of these stories and some of the new ones that have taken place since Peter last did this.
Among the ones you're looking at, the cases, of course, the Phoenix, Arizona case, 1997, where thousands of people reported seeing something huge over the skies in Phoenix. And then, of course, the St. Clair County, Illinois case, which, David, I'm very familiar with. I was in St. Louis at the time, where several police officers spotted this huge flying craft. We don't know if it's man-made or extraterrestrial. All we do know is people are seeing this very large, strange craft.
You're absolutely right, and you bring up a good point, George, in that it was police officers, and it's often police officers and pilots, and these are the kinds of people who are trusted with such monumental tasks in our community, whether it be to keep our community safe, to keep the planes in the air, to protect, you know, from a military standpoint, whatever their mission might be. And these are men and women who not only believe what they see, but they remember it so vividly that they're able to share the story with the rest of us. You know, one town you didn't mention was Stephenville, Stephenville, Texas, which over the last year, you know, in January of this year, it was a pilot with 20 years experience who first talked about those intense lights moving through the town at such a high rate of speed, and come to find out there were several people who had seen the same thing. They even described what looked like F-16s trying to chase after it. And as you know, there were a number of people who basically described in very similar terms what they saw. And that's what makes each of these stories, the one in Illinois, the one in Arizona, and now the one in Texas, so compelling. The one in Arizona, though, is quite fascinating because that, I believe, was one of the only cases where you actually see something caught on someone's, you know, home video recorder. And you basically hear, you know, the person not believing what they're seeing as they're rolling on it.
We even had the former governor at the time, Fife Symington, who kind of laughed about this, only to recant years later and admit that whatever happened was very strange indeed.
Yeah, I think that he recanted because he was likely feeling the heat from so many people who say, how can you laugh at something so many people saw? And I think that is the premise of our, you know, hour and a half look at this. I think that you have to take it seriously when there are this many people convinced that they've come in contact or have at least witnessed something, not on their own. In many cases, as you point out, in many cases, they are in great numbers of company that actually see the same thing.
That's UFO, Seeing is Believing, this Tuesday night on ABC's Prime Time. This weekend, I was with a couple of friends, Dr. Nandi. He is a psychiatrist out here in Los Angeles. Now, I only see him socially, not professionally, and his wife, Mira. And we were out, and all of a sudden, Dr. Nandi spotted over in the corner James Gandolfini. That's Tony Soprano and his new wife, Deborah Lynn. So he went up there and started talking, and he brought me up there. And so I did my darndest to get James, Tony Soprano, on the program, and he just won't do it. He says, you know what, I'm afraid of radio. I'm not going to do it. And he said, but you know what? And he started thinking about it, but then he had to leave. So they gave him his bill, and he was ready to pay his tab for his martinis, I guess, that he was drinking. And I said, James, let me pay for your tab. It's something I want to do. And he said, no, you don't have to do that. I can afford it. And I says, hey, just let me do that. It's something I just want to do. And he said, okay, fine. So he shook my hand, and he and his wife walked away. The bartender came up to me and said, George, his bill is $5,000. I almost fell. I almost collapsed. And then I said, you've got to be kidding. He says, yeah, I'm kidding. It's only $80. So I paid it. $80 I can afford. $5,000 I can't. I don't know what you can afford these days. But in a moment, Catherine Austin Fitz talks with us about just what is going on Wall Street. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine Austin Fitz, founder and president of Solari, serving as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street Investment Bank, then of Dillon Reed and Company. Here she is. Catherine, I thought you'd be back, but I didn't expect this soon.
Well, gosh. I'm delighted to be back, although not, you know, I don't enjoy the circumstances.
This was not a surprise on Wall Street, was it?
No. Unfortunately, this was not a surprise, and our guess, although we're working with very limited information, is the kind of meltdown we're watching comes, in fact, from expectation. More and more people in the market get fearful, anticipate a drop in certain stocks, and the next thing you know, you've got a self-fulfilling prophecy on your hands that can only be stopped if the Fed and Treasury step in. And we've finally seen, after many bailouts and stepping in, Hank Paulson say, no, I'm not going to bail out Lehman Brothers. And so we've had Lehman Brothers file for Chapter 11 today with an extraordinary list of creditors, including some of the biggest mutual funds in the country. So this is one that's really going to hit on Main Street after people look at their 401ks and money markets and kind of the losses work their way through the system into people's accounts when they get their accounts next, you know, the beginning of next month.
And those shareholders of Lehman, they're going to get wiped out, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what appears. The stock still is trading for it's under a dollar, so Lehman has now joined Freddie and Fannie as penny stocks. And, of course, all the financials, George, took a huge hit today. And as you mentioned earlier, the Dow was down by over 500 points. So anybody in the equity markets, or almost everybody in the equity markets, is hurting across the board. Now, one of the things that the Fed and the Treasury have done to try and help the banks and the financials recapitalize is get the dollar very, very high. So one of the few places an investor can go right now to make money is into the dollar. But, of course, long run, that's the last place you want to be. And, in fact, we saw Yahoo Finance today having articles saying, how long can the U.S. continue to how long can the Treasury securities, be creditworthy?
Yeah, they can't keep bailing or investing and giving money away. Where's the money coming from, Catherine? That's what boggles my mind.
Well, it's coming from two sources. One, we're just printing dollars, and the government is.
And we being the Federal Reserve, right?
Both the Reserve and the Treasury and through the federal budget. And then we're borrowing more money with treasuries and agency securities. So we're basically printing money through the central banking mechanism, but we're also printing securities.
It's almost like using your credit card to pay your mortgage and you don't pay off the credit card.
Right.
You could run into trouble that way.
Right. George, here's the bad news. The system can continue to work as long as you can force people to take dollars, and that comes down to the game of geopolitics and, of course, whether or not the military is supporting the central banking policies.
Catherine, I saw a story today that Abu Dhabi was on the fence but waiting to see what to do to bail out banks, too. I mean, have we just lost our sovereignty in this country? With financial markets, it's gone.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, as you and I've talked about several times, we moved significant capital out of this country to Asia, the Middle East, and the emerging markets, and replaced that capital with debt. And as a result, we absolutely have lost our sovereignty financially.
So what do we do? I mean, how do we get out of this? I looked at my 401k today. It lost 42 cents, which is a huge percent. It lost 42 cents per share.
Right.
On my 401, it's in a mutual fund. But, I mean, that's down over 16 to 20% now when they calculate it tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, people, individuals, they can't sustain these kinds of losses.
Right. And there's a huge wake-up call going out. What has amazed me, George, is we've had so many people in America think that the system would protect them and that the financial system was fundamentally sound, and have believed that if they proceeded to invest in sort of many things that were not financially sustainable, that they would be all right. And now the message is coming home, the old-fashioned things that your parents or grandparents used to tell you are now coming true. If you put your money in things that are not sustainable, at some point you're going to lose your money. And so the message to many of us is, how do we get our money and our lives back, taking care of real things and doing it in a way which is responsible and productive? Because the whole country has literally been off on a binge, and the binge is over, and now we've got to clean up our act.
Absolutely. Was this all because of the mortgage fiasco, primarily?
The mortgage fiasco was at the heart of the bubble and the manipulation, but there were other components. One was the suppression of the gold prices, and huge amounts of debt in a variety of other areas, student loans, autos. But the big problem on top of that, George, has been, think of the financial system now as sort of an upside-down pyramid with mainstream at the bottom and you layer on top of it all this debt, and then you layer on top of the debt these huge derivatives. And, of course, all of it is depending on the cash flows in mainstream and the real economy to keep it going. And if you strip that economy, then there's nothing there to hold up the upside-down pyramid.
We're going to be back with more discussions with Catherine Austin Fitz. We're also going to take your phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Catherine Austin Fitz. And, Catherine, last week, Paul Guercio was talking about his partner, Dr. George Hart. They hit up the Merlin Project, which is a computer software program that looks at trends and tracks them. And George Hart had told Paul, look for Merrill Lynch to go soon. Was this buyout by Bank America foreseen?
Merrill Lynch has been bought out by Bank America. The one to be the most nervous about, I believe, is AIG.
The insurance company.
AIG, right? Is an insurance company, very active in Wall Street, so it's a very much of a hybrid. And interestingly enough, George, it's one of the major providers of air and emissions insurance to a lot of the people we're now watching in trouble or going down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a major commercial building insurer, and one investment news writer said this week that it was a conduit between Wall Street and Main Street, which is a remarkably intelligent comment about AIG. And if AIG goes down, we could really see some real problems ripple throughout the economy and into Main Street. So I would say Merrill is safely tucked away now into Bank of America, and AIG is going to be the story to watch.
Where does Bank of America get that kind of money? $50 billion buyout of Merrill Lynch?
Bank of America could not, in my opinion, could not do that kind of buyout without some kind of assurance from the Treasury and the Fed. So who knows what the back...
There's a deal there somewhere.
Yeah, what the deal is. The Fed has liberalized the kind of collateral they will take. They're now, in addition to taking sort of mortgage-backed securities and weaker credits and fixed income, they're now agreeing to take equity as collateral.
Are people still going to buy homes? Can they buy homes? I mean, is there mortgage money out there?
You know, one of my favorite quotes, I have a wonderful precious metals dealer who said, the thing I try to stress to people about the global financial meltdown is the morning after the global financial meltdown, somebody's going to wake up wanting breakfast, and somebody's going to... I was going to make money cooking it for him. And the thing to remember, George, is life goes on, and a lot's going on in Main Street, particularly because, remember, agriculture, the United States is still the dominant player in agriculture. We're still the breadbasket. We still have phenomenal natural resources. There's a lot going on Main Street that if we started to support it and not drain it with all of this financial engineering in Wall Street, that could grow and you know, make a lot of breakfast for a lot of people. And, yeah, we're still going to need homes, and we're still going to need food, and we're still going to need to get the kids to school, and they're still going to need to get educated. So life's going to go on no matter what happens to Wall Street.
And we'll go on in just a moment. We're going to take your calls now with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, the price of a barrel of oil has dropped about 30% since its high, yet at the pump it's only dropped about 7%. How come?
George, it is stupefying. I do not know. The oil market is one of the most manipulated in the world.
Yes, it is.
And I am deeply suspicious of these prices. The most important factor here is not just the prices, the fact that we're still using oil for so many things. Because, as you know, the $64 question on the future of our economy is, when are we going to unsuppress energy technology?
Exactly.
So I say let's unsuppress energy technology as quickly as possible and stop even worrying about the price of oil.
Let's go out to Buffalo, New York. Claudia, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Claudia.
I just had two quick questions for you. Do you think that with all the turmoil on Wall Street right now that this will be the time they finally break the buck with the mutual funds? And also, with all the currency that they're dumping in with to save Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, how do you think this will hurt us on the world stage as far as China and OPEC?
What's going to happen is there's going to be, to get people around the world to hold the dollar and hold Treasury securities is going to require more and more force. And the $64 question is, are they going to dump versus are we going to be successful in using force to get them to keep it? And the challenge is, as we continue to be successful getting them to hold it, it just encourages more lack of productivity here. So this is coming to a head, and it's anybody's answer whether this will result in a falling dollar or war.
We're going to wake up in the morning and look at our money market accounts, and will the principal be eroded away, or does that stay the same?
It depends on the fund. What we're watching is a deterioration of the kind of credits that are in money market accounts and bond funds. If you notice, on the Lehman Chapter 11 filing, the largest holders were PIMCO, Franklin, Vanguard, and presumably those are mutual funds and or money market accounts. We'll know as we work through the documents what's exactly, but it's time to stop just looking at the fund and start to look deeply into what's in it.
What's in it, exactly.
And make sure that you're not investing in funds or money markets that are full of securities that really are not resting on real fundamental economic value.
Out to my natural-born city, Detroit. Mike, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm a truck driver for the post office. Hold on a minute.
Okay, there you are. Verification, Catherine. Now he knows he's telling the truth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm wondering about the civil service pensions. I'm going to retire in about 2 years.
Is there
I have anything to live on.
Any money there?
The civil service pension at the federal level is most likely in the same basket with the Treasury securities. If the federal credit is still considered creditworthy, you should be fine. If it's not, everything is up for grabs, but it's not just the civil service. It's across the board. It's agricultural subsidies. It's Social Security. It's everything. Now, the logical way for the government to handle this is to literally keep financing, printing more money and financing out so that all these obligations remain good, but the purchasing power declines steadily. The $64 question is going to be, at some point, what we saw announced this weekend was a syndicate of global banks put together to help the bailout. At what point does the control of the federal credit turn to a global group instead of a national group? Because we've lost the ability nationally to support and hold up the dollar. So the risk we all face, whether it's our Social Security check or our federal pension check, is it's going to be governed by the World Bank and the IMF, or is it going to be governed by an administration, a national administration reporting to Congress? And if we continue to have a deterioration in our financial sovereignty, we're going to end up governed by the World Bank and the IMF, and we've seen what they've done to groups all around the world and other countries that have run into these kinds of problems.
Catherine, you served under the first Bush administration. I assume, are we talking about the father's administration? Or
yes,
okay,
the father's administration.
Okay. Where is this president during this catastrophe? I mean, I'm not hearing from him or Dick Cheney. I mean, where are these people?
George,
am I right?
Yes. We are watching Hank Paulson. Hank Paulson is essentially running the country, from what I can tell.
I mean, where is he during this moment of crisis?
They are off the stage.
On purpose?
I don't know.
Is there something wrong here?
What I will tell you, well,
There's something very peculiar here, and I can't put my finger on it.
Let's go back to the last time this happened. In 1988, we had a big housing bubble burst, and I was on Wall Street at Dillon Reed, and George Gould, who was the number two at Treasury, came up and literally sat with a group of partners, including Nick Brady, who was the chairman of the firm, and said, you know, we're holding this together with, you know, Band-Aids and bubble gum. And Nick went in as the Secretary of the Treasury in September, 3 months before Bush, his candidate, won the election, and really with a mandate, let's just hold this together till after the election, and that's what we're doing. We're watching a process to hold this together after the election, and if I was Karl Rove running this election for the Republicans, I would tell Cheney and George Bush to disappear from the stage so McCain can run as a reformer and an outsider who's not associated with all the pain that people are feeling from the last 4 to 8 years.
So they put the election ahead of the American people because it needs leadership right now, and it needs comfort, and it's not getting it.
I think these guys are all about winning. Winning is everything.
And they can't win in this one.
Well, right now, for 8 years they've been winning, because if you look at the amount of money that has gone into the pockets of the people who got them elected.
Well, in that case, they may be geniuses.
Right. I mean, they're looking at a huge political win behind the scenes, but if the Republican ticket is going to have any chance in November, I think they have to be completely disappeared, is what I'm assuming.
Mike in Salem, Oregon. Welcome to the show, Mike. You're on with Catherine Austin Fitz.
Hello, George. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
This is Mike, and I'm glad you brought up Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, because right now we are living Reaganomics. It's here. It's on us. Our country's being run by criminals. This is ridiculous. I mean, our future has been stolen.
Or sold down the river.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes. What happened? Where's our 200-mile-an-hour train? Where's our Autobahn? Look outside. We're falling apart.
That's true.
You can't argue with them, Catherine.
That's true. The question is, when will we turn it around? We can't wait for our leaders to do it. We're going to have to do it if it's going to happen. And let me play the devil's advocate.
This is a push for one world government. This is a push to get the Amero in here, to get I wouldn't be surprised if somehow the dollar and the euro merge somehow and we use them all.
But let me play the bad guy, George. For 10 years, 20 years, I've watched everyone in America finance this. In other words, if you sit down and you look at where our time and our purchases and our investments are going, we're all financing this because we think it makes us more money. And so this has not just been a few guys on Wall Street or a few guys in Washington. There is a very broad base of Americans who have been basically supporting all of this with a whole variety of our actions. And the minute we recognize that and take responsibility, we will start to gather our power to shift things away.
Mike in Oregon believes this is criminal. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. What we're watching is a criminal enterprise. And the perfect example is that the New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. And what we're watching with Lehman and Merrill and AIG is we're basically watching the member banks and owners of the New York Fed. The New York Fed is the depository, is responsible for the government accounts. Between 1998 and 2001, there's $4 trillion of undocumentable adjustments in the federal accounts and a refusal by the federal government and the Treasury to produce audited financial statements since that law went into effect in 1995. Now, if your bank ran coast-to-coast bank accounts, George, in violation of the law, or if you were running your accounts in violation of the law, they'd cut you off.
They'd come right down on you.
So why have these banks been running the federal accounts outside of the law and in violation of the law for the last 10-plus years?
So they're doing whatever they want with the money, aren't they?
Well, who knows what's going on, but essentially what we've been watching is a black budget and off-balance sheet shenanigans that have been growing and growing and growing, an increased dependency on organized crime and warfare. And the problem with that, George, is that it crowds out the good. We've seen more and more dirty money flow into the economy and to different organizations, municipalities, and it's literally shut out the good. And if we're going to reverse it, we've got to start again. We've got to get the blood out of the toes and back to the heart and the lungs.
Can the country declare bankruptcy? Can a country do that? I know cities can.
In theory, it can. The challenge is you're talking about a geopolitical
mess
situation, because our creditors are not domestic. They're global.
They're global, and
they're
there are other major countries. And if they lose confidence in us, it's over. But wouldn't it be nice to start all over? More debt. It's done.
Well, but here's how you do it. In other words, think of America not as one country, but 74,000 communities. or, you know, if we wanted to just take it down to the county level. And the reality is the huge opportunity is if we started to re-engineer all the federal government money bottom up, there's extraordinary opportunities to do that and do that in a way that builds new jobs and income for small business and revives the infrastructure. So, you know, in a funny kind of way, we've got to clean the sheet and start to re-engineer, but we've got to do it place by place because it's a very big country, George, and every place is different.
You know, Gerald Celente was on with you not too long ago, and, you know, he was saying, you know what, tip of the iceberg.
Uh-huh.
He's right.
He's right.
And you've been saying it, too. Stephen in Chattanooga, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, George. I love when you have Catherine on. My question is about the combined annual financial report.
Uh-huh.
Why isn't that an audited account of what the government takes in and spends? Because it can be found on Google, and it
right.
shows
and it's very
have.
It's a very useful document to look at. The
explain that
it's called the consolidated. You got to help me out, Mike, with the exact term. It's the consolidated annual financial reports. I believe
of who.
Every state and a local entity is required to report
to file
them.
This? Okay.
Right. And I'll tell you one of the most fascinating things, and it's a learning journey. You can't just do it in one day. But if you start to download all those reports for your state and local entities and read them, you will learn more about where you live and what's going on around you, and you will find all sorts of hidden pockets of money and opportunities to change things. So I really encourage people to start to learn about the money around them and start to see opportunities to change them because, you know, so much of the government waste that has been going on or government money allocated by political means we could afford 5 or 10 years ago, we can't afford that now. And so it really behooves a lot of us as citizens to dig in and see where are the opportunities to change things, and not just the money, but the rules that affect the money.
Where will the shoe fall next? What's going to happen? What do you think?
Well, the big question is whether or not the interventions will be able to stabilize the situation and keep it going through the election, or whether we're going to see a real meltdown. And I would tend to vote as follows, George, because I think what's going to happen is we're going to finish passing the new federal budget. The new federal budget will come online October 1st. We hold things together through the election, and then we're going to face the year-end transactions. We go into the inauguration, and then after the inauguration, we're in for real trouble because we come into the investor reporting dates in March and the corporate tax dates in March and the individual in April, and then go into a summer. And that's when the real housing recession is going to hit. Because remember, what we're watching now is a bubble burst. What we have yet to hit is as people get laid off, then you start to get the real housing recession. So I think next summer is the greatest danger zone, and that's what we saw the last housing bubble burst was the summer after the election. So my guess is there's a good chance they can hold it together through the election. At the same time, it is absolutely essential that every person and every family realize that this is a serious wake-up call if it's not a meltdown, and you've just got to get out of the bubble economy and get yourself repositioned in the real economy, and the time to start learning about that and doing that is now.
How many people at Lehman will lose jobs?
A lot. A lot.
Here we go again. Catherine, thanks for the updates.
Thank you, George.
We'll be back with Robert Bivol. We're going live to the United Kingdom for the Egypt Code. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.